From Love and Radio and Luminary, you're listening to The Secrets Hotline. I'm Nick Fenderkolk. A little later, I'll be speaking with Anna Sale from the podcast Death, Sex, and Money. But first, let's listen to your calls.
My secret is I'm calling in the midst of the pandemic, and I just showered for the first time in 80 days. I don't know, I didn't feel that good. It was just tedious, but damn. So that's my secret. Hope everyone's okay.
Old, and I have a son with mental illness. And something I've never told anybody is that ever since he's been extremely mentally ill, he has a severe anxiety disorder and a mood disorder. I've felt like people like him, if they don't want to be here and they don't feel their life has a purpose, we should just let them go. And I've never told anybody that because I thought people would think I'm a terrible parent and that I should feel that my son should be here at no cost. But I don't. I feel that it's more compassionate for me to let him go, even if he decides to commit suicide. I feel I should let him do that. So that's my secret, and hopefully you guys don't think I'm a horrible person. Thank you.
My secret is that I know I'm not as strong as I need to be. I became a parent for the first time last year. My son is almost 18 months old, and he's amazing and healthy, and we have it really easy in a lot of ways, but it's really hard for me, even though it's easier than a lot of people I know have it with their kids.
I think I may be pregnant. I've been divorced for a year, and I've been flipping around using protection, except for this one guy, and I don't know his last name or his phone number. And now I'm a really great guy, and he's my boyfriend, and I really like him. But neither of us wants more kids. My secret is, part of me wants this pregnancy, but not to keep the baby. To be pregnant one more time and then give this amazing gift to another person. I can do that. So when I look at this test, I'm gonna cry either way.
Why are so many people all over the globe choosing the Secrets Hotline as their hotline? Find out for yourself by calling 1-929-SECRETS. That's 929-732-7387. Answering service also available at secretshotline.org.
A few years ago, I had a friend contact me, a very trustworthy friend contact me, saying that she had this really great opportunity to get paid for something very simple, not very sexual, and that is to pee on someone. So I thought, one, this is hilarious. You know, don't knock until you try it. She told me he checked out, he's solid, he has this like banking, you know, involvement, whatever, this big baller with all this money. She said even that her student loans have been paid off because he followed through just by them texting and saying what they were going to do. So I think her student loans were upwards of like $15,000 or $20,000, and she said they were cleared and paid off. So I thought, well, that's pretty legit, you know, proof is in the pudding, so let's move forward. So she gave me his contact number, and I was messaging him on WhatsApp, not a real phone number, of course. The situation was that he was looking for someone who could pee on him for at least 90 seconds. And it was a very contractual situation of, if you can follow through, I'll follow through with the money situation. So I thought, no problem. I will be able to figure out a way to pee for 90 seconds straight stream of urine. So my friend and I, we drove to the town, after everything was all figured out, my friend and I got in the car, drove on over to a town an hour and a half away from us where he was, and met at a hotel. He had paid for her student loans and my student loans. They were completely paid off. And he had also paid off my friend's apartment for a full year, as she said, which was cleared and was good, and he had followed through. So he had spent upwards of 50 grand at this point. So we met up at this hotel, and we're not really sure how this is going to work out, but we're on cloud nine because I just got my student loans paid off. We drank an obscene amount of water on the way over, just laughing, talking about how much we had to pee, my friend and I. So I'm wondering how the fuck this is going to go down. So I pulled the trigger and said, okay, I'll go first. So my friend goes into the bathroom, and he lays down some towels, and he lays horizontal supine on the ground, and he tells me, keep your underwear on. I just want you to kneel over me and just pee on my face, and I'm just going to drink your urine. So that's exactly what happened. So I peed on this guy's face. I was kind of into it because he was so into it. I mean, not that I'm into that kind of stuff. Maybe, I don't know. But he finished drinking all of it and said that my pee was very sweet and sweet as nectar. And then we switched. My friend came out and I went to the bathroom and he drank all of her pee. So at this point, this grown-ass dude had two full adult bladders full of urine in his stomach. So that was kind of it. We said, you know, this is really great. Let's do this again sometime. And so we drive home and we're on cloud nine. We go to the bar. We buy shots for everybody, leave a $20 tip for the bartender, thinking, you know, we're going to be big ballers. Like, our lives are going to be figured out. You know, at 23, I was like, I'm going to have a sugar daddy that's going to pay for my life. This is great. And this was a very short period of time where I started talking to him, to whenever he paid off my loans, to meeting him for the first time. Maybe only 72 hours had elapsed. So moving forward, we had this next new plan. He was texting me and he was saying that my pee was so sweet and he wanted to see me again and just see me alone. And so I thought, okay, let's do this. So he was talking big numbers. He was talking upwards of $50,000 and $10,000 in cash whenever he saw me. So I thought, all right, let's go. My life's going to be figured out. So I drive the hour and a half away, meet him at the same hotel. And this time, unfortunately, we ended up having sex and I peed on him again, of course, as per the deal. And, you know, we had been talking for some period of time after that, a pretty nice guy, I'd say. And he told me that he wanted to do something sexual. So he said he had this toy in his car and he was going to go get it. So I thought, okay. He goes downstairs and he gets it, and I'm sitting there by myself and could not believe where my life was at this exact moment. And 1 minute passed by, 2 minutes passed by, three, then four, then five. And I realized, oh my God, what if he doesn't come back? And I didn't receive any money. Very foolish of me not to have asked for it in the beginning, but whatever. So I call him and then I text him and nothing. This guy is gone. I don't know which kind of vehicle he drives. He is gone. So I put my clothes back on and I'm freaking out. He texts me and said, I'm sorry, I can't be this person for you. Some bullshit. And I realized, oh my God, I just got played. I was convinced in my head, but it didn't make sense because he had paid for things already. What happened? So he said that he left a bag of money, whatever, on my car. So I go downstairs and I look at my car, nothing. I searched high and low. He's like, oh, look underneath your car. I look underneath my car. There's no bag of money. And I just imagine him sitting in his car somewhere distant, just laughing at me, thinking, this 23-year-old is so stupid. I was really pissed, but he had paid off my loan, so I thought, well, I can't completely burn this bridge. Until the next day, I get an email saying that something is wrong with my account balance and I had to call them as soon as possible. I was very nervous about being found out, as I don't really do things like this actually at all. And turns out my account balance was not clear and all $13,000 of my loans were reestablished in my account. And then my friend, the same day, said the same thing happened to her. And also that her apartment complex balance for the 1 year came back, the balance did, and she had to pay interest on top of it for, I guess, a bounce check. So this guy had figured out how to completely scam someone. I'll never really know what happened. All I know is that I was taken to someone's pool, and that's the part that hurts the most. But I rest happy, and it makes me laugh because that motherfucker had to drink my pee, and that just makes it so great to be able to say, yeah, I pissed on someone for money. Have a great day.
About 10 years ago, I was on my way to my first week of college, and I was bringing the last load of all my shit from my mom's house to my dorm. And I was driving through the neighborhood, and in our neighborhood, we had a bunch of geese, and these geese just shit everywhere. For some reason, they were walking in the middle of the road this day, and probably about 10 of them. And I ran them all over with my truck. And then the worst part is, I looked in the rear view mirror after I ran them over, and they're like flapping around. And I reversed and I ran them over again. That's pretty fucked up. But I got it off my chest. Love you.
This is a secret. Today, I watched a puppy drown. I was driving out to this lake by myself, and I was eating lunch. And I was just kind of looking at this dock nearby, and I saw this couple walk out on the dock with this little, like, dachshund puppy, and that was, like, following them. And then after a couple of minutes, the puppy must have fallen into the water from the dock, and I could see him swimming around and his little head just kind of bobbing up above the water. And the couple kind of looked around half-heartedly for a couple minutes, and I didn't do anything. And then they just walked away, and I didn't see the puppy's head anymore, and I didn't know what to do, and I just saw them walk away, and they didn't come back. And I didn't say anything to them, and I didn't try to find them, and I didn't get into the water or anything. And I think what's worse than that is I didn't feel anything, and I still don't feel anything, and I'm afraid that makes me really fucked up inside. Yeah. Thank you. Love the show. Bye.
My guest today is Anna Sale. She's the host and creator of Death, Sex, and Money, a show that describes itself as the things we think about a lot and need to talk about more. And they're not lying. Anna's created a space where people both famous and non-famous feel comfortable sharing what they're struggling with. She also has two kids who are almost exactly my kids' ages. So, of course, the conversation naturally turned to what exactly we should teach children about secrets.
When I think about, like, secrets, I was thinking about what having little kids, like how having to teach someone small about the concept of what's private and what's not private is really interesting. And then when they pick up on secrets and like how that's a way to create, like if you're creating a private moment, you're thus creating intimacy with that person because you're excluding others. Like that's been interesting for me to watch and like help explain to a 3-year-old, for example.
Is there a specific time that comes to mind, like a conversation that you had?
I think private, it's like gets really like carnal really quickly, because the first conversations about privacy came up in like potty training, you know, or like with bodies. And then from that, like, grows all these other things about, like, because this is private, like, this means, you know, someone needs permission to touch this part of you, you know, that kind of thing. Like, it all starts from like this sense of like, there are parts of you that everyone can see, and then there are parts of you that are hidden, and that's private, and that's appropriate. It kind of flowed out of explaining how bodies work. And now it's like, now my 4-year-old understands that, like, if she whispers to my husband at the table, like, that's kind of a special thing that I don't get to be a part of. And it's like fun. There's delight in that, creating that privacy.
You've kind of created this space where people feel comfortable divulging stuff with you. The intimacy that's created when you do these interviews, do you find that it ends as soon as the interview is over?
You know, I've like, not always, like sometimes I have these long relationships afterwards where we email and keep in touch and I check in, and that's most often. But I was just thinking about this the other day, because it was so striking to me. One of my favorite interviews I've ever done, like, it was just such a, like, just one of those moments where you, like, as the tape is rolling and as you're having the conversation, you know, it's like a very special moment in time that's being captured, was with the actor Ellen Burstyn. And I was in her apartment in Manhattan, and we had this long, very intimate conversation that started in her childhood and ended at the idea of her death. Like, we talked about everything in her bedroom. And after we finished, I remember she sort of walked away and then went back into her like living room, where she had these beautiful big New York City apartment windows. And this woman who had helped us set up the interview, like a publicist person, sort of like walked us out when we were all like packed up with our like recording equipment. And I just remember sort of like feeling like we should hug or something, like Ellen and I should hug. Like, we'd had this really, really intense encounter. And she had sort of like, she was just sort of standing in the living room, and I think she might've waved, but it was not a sort of like, see ya, like casual, like intimate goodbye. It was as if she had been on like, you know, sort of like, this is a person who has spent her adult life like having these intense emotional performances on a stage. And then she, you know, I presume just like goes back to her green room and has time alone. And that's sort of what it felt like. It felt like I was with her while we were making something together. And then the relationship was not going to continue after that. She had retreated.
How does that make you feel? Like, is that frustrating? Is that painful? Or is it?
I just sort of remember it as being like, oh, that must be what it's like to be a public person. I didn't take it personally. I thought, like, I mean, sure, I would love to be best buddies and go to theater with Ellen Burstyn every weekend, but that was not to be. Yeah, it made me think about, she must be someone who has learned how to move through the world with, like, the shades are up and the doors are open, and now they're closed.
What about sort of random listeners who get in touch with you?
That feels much more like we have like an ongoing relationship typically, because it's sort of like when I'm talking to someone who's reaching out to the show, they're coming to us with a sort of pre-existing relationship, and then we have an encounter, or like we get to know each other, and then we're in touch after, almost always.
Do listeners bring you secrets like outside of the show?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do you feel blessed or burdened by the folks who are divulging these secrets to you?
I think both. You know, I feel honored that of all the places there are to reach out on the internet, that this is the place that our show is where they wanted to share. I also wonder sometimes, like, huh, I wonder what's going on in their lives where this is the place that they're sharing this thing that, you know, in examples where it's clear that they're not talking about it anywhere else. Yeah, I think the burden is like just like wanting to make sure that the conversation that we have, in which like I want to know more about this thing that they want to talk about, that also it is something that doesn't complicate a hard thing that they're going through. I want it to add support or add spaciousness or add a sense of that they're not doing it by themselves. But the burden is like, we have to, this is like delicate stuff. So we have to do it well.
Hi. I just listened to one of your recent episodes and heard a story in which a girl was contemplating taking her life, and a chance encounter on a mountain with an acquaintance changed her mind. And it reminded me that I went through a very similar experience that I never shared with anybody. In my early 20s, I was extremely depressed. I experienced a lot of existential dread. I didn't know what to do with my life, and I felt like I was at a standstill and that I basically couldn't move. I had taken a trip to San Diego to visit some family one spring, and I was walking on the boardwalk, and it was a sunny day, and everybody was smiling and laughing, and all I wanted to do was completely disappear. I found myself walking on a rock jetty out towards the sea at a certain point. I almost wasn't even paying attention to how I was walking or how I got there. And I can't say at that moment I decided that I was going to take my life, but I was sort of praying that an enormous wave would just sweep me off the rocks and make me disappear. And as I was walking, I passed a man who was walking a lot slower than I was. I have a New York City walk, and I was just plowing to the end of the jetty, and I passed him and forgot about him and kept walking and walking. And suddenly I realized I was only about 50 feet from the end of the rock. And in between me and that edge were about 30 enormous pelicans. Again, I'm from the East Coast. I have no experience with pelicans. I was so surprised at how enormous they were. For a moment, I just stood there because I didn't know if I should take another step. They were so big and scary looking, and I was afraid that they might attack me. And I felt silly, but I sort of stood there in this hesitation. Soon, the man who was walking slower than me caught up to me, and he stood at my side, and we sort of just stared at these pelicans. And I said to him, "Are these things dangerous?" And very calmly and matter-of-factly, he just says, "I guess there's just one way to find out." He just slowly starts to make his way forward in a straight line, you know, through the rocks. And sure enough, one by one, the pelicans flew off. And I just sort of, in amazement, followed behind him. And we were there at the edge, just staring out at the Pacific Ocean together. And I suddenly was completely overwhelmed with the feeling of wanting to live and the symbolism of the moment, which was that he showed me the power of taking one more step, even when I didn't know if I'd be okay. And it was so simple, but it really translated to what I was going through in life. And in that moment, I realized I have to just keep taking another step forward, even if I can only take one. You know, it's the only way I can find out if I'll make it to the end. To this day, I mean, I have no idea who this man is or was. And we didn't even say much after that. We just shared the moment of living and on that ledge and looking at the Pacific Ocean, and on our separate terms, made our way back.
Thank you.
That's it for now. But as long as there are secrets in the world, the hotline will be open. So share yours or leave feedback at secretshotline.org or by calling 1-929-SECRETS. That's 929-732-7287. If you like the show, want access to even more secrets, and hear more of my conversation with Leah Tao, listen to the director's cut of The Secrets Hotline only on Luminary. Just go to luminary.link/secrets for a free trial. The Secrets Hotline is produced by Andrew Gill and Phil Domachowski, with help from Cassidy Jackson. I'm Nick Van Der Kolk. We are a production of Love and Radio and brought to you by the fine folks at Luminary, all made possible by their members. Thank you. Special thanks to my guest, Anna Sale. You can find her show, Death, Sex, and Money, wherever you get your podcasts. That's where you can find her and my collaboration, Skin Hunger. Check it out. Also, Anna has a new book out, which I thoroughly recommend. Let's talk about hard things. Our theme song is by George Langford. Steven Jackson made the end theme. Other musicians featured in today's episode include Zeroshi, Stephen Vitiello and Molly Berg, Agnar Kia, Oliver Coates, Hyperspace Jelly, Visible Cloaks, Yoshio Ojima and Satsuki Shibano, Dialect, Joseph Shavison, and Lucretia Dalt. And, of course, thanks to all of you who have called in. We listen to every single secret, and this show wouldn't be possible without you. For more information, please visit our website, secretshotline.org, where you can sign up for our mailing list. You can also find us on Instagram at The Secrets Hotline, where we present your secrets using our patented receipt vision technology. Thanks for listening. And you've got this.